God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. you can raise your hand in the window and I will unmute you. Steph, if you'd like to, you're unmuted.
Hey, I'm Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hey, Steph, glad you're here.
Thanks, sweetie.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else? Oh, I see one.
I'm Dana, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dana.
Hey, Dana.
And then I see a Eureka.
Hi, it's my first meeting here back home. I'm Eureka and I'm an alcoholic.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
And there'll be some girls that'll put their numbers in the chat for you. Anybody can do that. All right. I don't see any others. Bear with me. This computer is being weird. Okay. Okay. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step 8 and 9, part 2. Please welcome our panel. We have Paul and Steve. Thanks for coming out. And I will, bear with me, I will share this reading up here. I don't know why this just happened. Sorry, y'all. I do this. Literally just went into full screen mode and I can't get back. All right, whatever. Let's see if this works. That work? Yeah, good. All right, sweet. The first reading is going to be on page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. All righty. Whichever one of y'all wants to go first, you have the freedom to unmute. I should have hashed that out in the beginning. Sorry about that, guys.
I want Paul to go first.
Yeah, I was about to say Paul because he was popping up first. So I think the...
Oh, gosh. Well... My heart just skipped a beat. Hi, everybody. I'm Paul, alcoholic. Thank you again for the invite here tonight. I thank the group for the kind invitation to me. I don't want to share in that. No, I'm like getting around. Yeah, I can definitely relate with that, with past experiences of, choosing to drink before my wife's, being able to show her I love her or show her kindness. The selfishness in me just kicks into full gear. And not with just alcohol. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's other things in my life that come up where I can get very just obsessed with something, whether it be work, and that actually interferes with stuff at home also, with relationships with not only my wife, but, my children, not being able to show them enough time as a father and show up for them, and not even just show up to like sports events, but also to like listen to them. You know what I mean? Especially in today's world with modern technology and cell phones and, Facebook and all this stuff, social media. Sometimes, my children would be like, dad, look, dad, look. And they're really yelling for my attention, And so, I'm not drinking or using today, but that kind of stuff happens to me in my life. And I immediately drop the phone and say, oh my God, And like, I'm stuck in like obsession, with the cell phone. And, I've dealt with that in the past. Up until recently, as a matter of fact, right now I'm in a process of getting a divorce. See, now you know why I didn't want to share. Hey, I'm smiling about it. You know what I mean? And, my soon to be ex-wife, we still care for each other and stuff. And, that's all I have to share on that. Thank you.
Steve Farnes with Alcoholic. So, I grew up in a very unfortunate set of circumstances that pretty much caused me to not even be attracted to these monogamous relationships that our culture tends to condition us towards. But I'm also a homosexual. I didn't really come to grips with that until I was 30, even though I was doing a lot of stuff prior to that. But in a very alcoholic fashion, I still had a wife anyways, and I just didn't think it was her business, I guess, to know that I had these other things going on. But I remember this good friend of mine who was having some serious, I was sponsoring him. He was having some spiritual or some serious marital issues. And he told me that this guy came up to him and he said, well, who are you going to go to for, guidance on these problems that you're having with your relationship? And he said, I'm going to my sponsor. He said, well, your sponsor is middle-aged. He was quite young. Your sponsor is middle-aged, homosexual, and not in a relationship and, publicly, declares he has no desire to be in a relationship. Why would you want to go to him? Right. And this guy, then he said, that's exactly why I want to go to him, because he doesn't have an argument to defend. He has to go to principal. He's not going to justify his poor behaviors by sharing them with me, by telling me, my sponsor, Tom, he one time said, I'm having problems with my marriage. I need somebody I can identify with. Right. Somebody that has experience with marriage. And his sponsor said to him, he says, well, that guy over there he's been married 5 times. He's got lots of experience. Why don't you go ask him for guidance? It's like somehow I just knew that he probably wasn't the one I should go to. And so, you know, so the point that I'm trying to drive home here is that we always go to principle, and regardless of, you know, what else we got going on in our relationships, our primary purpose is to serve God by helping others, primarily to show them how to do the same for others and how to do the same for others, and on and on and on. And all of these other attributes of our relationships are really insignificant in that sense. You know, they're in there, you know, for identification purposes in order to be able to give example to the principle, but the principles don't change. When I use the word principles, I'm talking about principles that apply equally to everybody. And so when I tell people to you know, when we're trying to get ready for, you know, to figure out what direction we should go with the amends in any kind of relationship, I always ask them, I'm like, okay, well, if our primary purpose is to be in a position where we can help each other grow spiritually, then the worst harm that I can do is to put something between us that will keep you from feeling comfortable coming to me along spiritual lines if you ever needed to or wanted to. You know, recognizing that 99.999% of these people are never going to come to me, but it doesn't matter. I just need to make sure that avenue is open in order for me to be able to feel free and be able to feel in the right relationship with God. And so that's what I ask people. I'm like, you know, what is it that you can do to remove whatever's between you and this other person? And by asking yourself that question, it also alleviates us from this tendency we have as a society to group things together or get form and structure that ends up getting in the way of our primary purpose. For instance, all marriages, I got to do this. All ex-girlfriends, I got to do this. All drug dealers, I got to do that. All, you know, parents, I got to do that. Or all corporations, I need to do that. We don't want to, I don't think we should be trying to group things together like that. I think we should be taking each individual relationship individually, figuring out what can we do to mend this relationship by removing whatever is between us that would keep you from feeling comfortable coming to me along spiritual lines, or at the very least, make sure I don't put anything else between us that would block us from being able to do that. And that's how we protect ourselves from helping others. And that's the guide that I try to use when I'm trying to give guidance and direction and teach people principles. And it really has nothing to do with whether or not I'm married to that person, having sex with that person, whether I hate that person, whether I'm, you know, it doesn't really matter. If that's the question that I always go to make sure that I don't cause any more harm and, you know, and hopefully clean this thing up. So I'm going to leave it at that for now.
Thank you both. All right, let's get this screen back up. The next reading is going to be on page 81. Oops. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patients mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. It is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" All right. Paul.
Hi, guys. Paul, alcoholic. I just want to thank you, Steve, for sharing honest like that. It opened me right up, you know, and now I know why I was supposed to share first. I'm the guy who was very dishonest with my wife in sobriety, who was actually having different affairs and acting out sexually and stuff like that. And I never thought I would actually share that, at a meeting or anything. And those are things I would maybe share with one person, and maybe walk around with my head up acting like a recovered alcoholic, with a little bit of arrogance twisted up with that. Just for me saying that is kind of hard. Okay. Back in March, I went down to Florida to see Steve, after coming out of a big storm in my life. And, we went through the process with these principles, these steps, and, one thing that I came back to Connecticut was with making amends that I never forget was use words as a last resort. At first, when he said that, I didn't understand what he meant. I thought that I had to use a lot of words, to prove how sorry I am. But the more and more that I continued to stick through this with faith, and just trust in God, I understood what he was talking about. And, up until recently, we have some stuff going on where, like, I had 2 car loans in my name, and, I just went out and paid her car loan off so she didn't have any car payment no more because we're splitting up. So it is her car, even though it wasn't under my name. But, through prayer, and honestly, through prayer, it was like, I knew that was the right thing to do. And so these are the types of things, like, it's new to me. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. I was always honestly, I'm just speaking honest, I'm sorry. Oh my gosh. You have to forgive me. And like, things are better. So life goes on. You know what I mean? Like, who cares if that person's still hurt? And who cares if, like, I didn't like make a proper amends to show that, look, I really am disturbed by what I've done to you, And, but I'll pass it that. Thank you.
Thanks.
So, that line of using words as a last defense, there was actually a Dr. Bob quote where he said, carry this message as a last resort. If all else fails, use words, right? Actions speak louder than words. I can talk a good game, but if I'm not living this way of life, people are going to see that not only am I full of crap, but they're going to think AA is a bunch of crap because I know that I don't represent AA, but that new guy doesn't know that I don't represent AA. And so, and then one of the things that I was thinking about when I was listening to the reading is, I have a few pet peeves in AA, things that bother me that really shouldn't bother me, but it really doesn't bother me. It's not like I'm losing sleep over it, but this thing that I've been hearing for decades in AA, what do they call it? They call it the living amends, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is so much garbage personally, what I mean? It's like, when I listen, I'm like, okay, so tell me what is a living amends to you, right? To this, unidentified person. And they're like, well, I'm giving my mother the daughter that she always deserved, and sober. And I'm like, okay, I like that. I think that you should definitely be doing that. But calling it an amends is butchering the English language because you're not mending a thing, But what you are doing by calling it an amends, and you may think that I'm making too big of a deal out of semantics, but what we're doing by calling it an amends is I'm giving myself a free pass, right? I don't ever want to forget that I could live 50 lifetimes and not have enough time to make up for the pain that I put my mother through, right? And the biggest one, I'm 16 years old and I got my mother's car. We're living in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm out crazy doing stuff all night long. And we didn't have cell phones. We had landlines, right? And somebody calls my mom in the middle of the night and says, when you see Steve Farnsworth, you tell him he's a dead man. How well do you think my mother slept that night? What can I possibly do to give her back that good night's sleep, that night's sleep that she lost? You know, so I don't, so I'm not saying that I don't ever want to forget that I can't make it all up to her in order to beat myself up. You know, I just, or even to, you know, so that I don't, you know, forget that I shouldn't be drinking. It's because, mostly because as we get older, and I'm 31 years sober now, I've gotten older in AA. For the record, there's no better way to get old than being in AA, but either way. My mom's getting older too. And at the older she gets, the more she needs me more than I need her. And when she calls me up and says, honey, can you do X, Y, and Z? I know the way I've examined my experience. I've thought about me a lot. Right? I know that if I give myself that free pass, my response, maybe not outwardly, but she'll be able to read it because she friggin' raised me, you know. But my response would be, my God, why can't she call one of my brothers or sisters? Why is she calling me? She knows how busy I am, you know. Where by not giving myself that free pass, my response is going to be, you're damn right. Where and when, and if I can't do it, I'll find somebody that can. That's what I want my response to be when my mother calls me up and asks me for a favor. So I don't want that free pass. I don't want to beat myself up. I don't think she would want me to beat myself up. I think she understands. She was a kid once too, right? But I do not want that free pass. And I think it's a butchering of the English language to sit there and go, you know, ain't it grand the wind stop blowing? You know what I mean? Or, you know, oh, I'm just giving her the son that she always, you know, deserved. It's like, it's such a cop out and it's such a butchering of the language. So I know that's a lot of opinion, but I don't speak for AA. I only speak for me, right? So AA's got no opinions, but Steve Farnsworth's got a crap ton of them. So that's all I got.
Oh, thank you. The next reading is also going to be on page 83. Oh, wait, what just happened here? Oh my God. All right, sorry about that, y'all. Yes, page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly with them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Right, Paul?
Hi guys, Paul, alcoholic. I don't know. I feel like I spoke on part of this. I mean, you know, so it's like, you know, just sitting here thinking, okay, what can you add to it? I just keep thinking about action, you know, and I love the name of you guys' group, Simple Actions, and they are simple actions. You know, it's not a difficult program. You know, the way the steps were presented to me, not just by Steve Farnsworth, but by another sponsor before that, was they were presented in a simple way. It wasn't like a difficult thing to go through the steps or to take the actions, you know, and or I didn't have to, like, you know, memorize the whole big book 1 through 164 to, be able to go out and be qualified to actually show somebody that like I care about them, you know? And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of my first experiences, I started getting involved with step work back in 2013. Previous to that, I never did any step work at all. And I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous since around 1997. So, you know, attending a lot of meetings and stuff. And then when the pain got great, you know, I knew that just attending the meetings wasn't working for a guy like me. So getting involved with the step work, I was introduced to, you know, taking the 12 steps. It took them the first time pretty quickly and was ready to go out and make amends like tomorrow. And I remember my first sponsor, he said, hold on a minute, you know, we didn't really discuss on how to do it or, and you know what I mean? It was like, I think we actually, I can't remember, but I think we talked about it. We made a list. Yeah. We made a list. And then, I right away, I think I actually called my mother that night or something and, you know, and then called him up and was like, hey, I called my mom up and like, you know, he was like, excuse me, you know, but it was like, he knew I meant well, so he didn't really, I mean, and I was new, but, you know, taking the actions of making amends, today, you know, I see it on my children's face that, you know, this year's Christmas is going to be awesome. You know what I mean? Daddy's here. I'm not just here in the physical, but Daddy's here today. You know, I pay attention to them. I spend a lot of time with them. And so we get, you know, split visitation where they come to my house on Fridays afternoons up until sometimes Monday morning or Tuesday morning. But you know, and they love coming over, you know what I mean? My wife told me, you know, they look forward to coming over here, and that makes me feel pretty good. See, it's about me again, see. you know, just being able to show the love to my kids, my girls, rather than just say, you know, Daddy loves you, you know what I mean? And off I go and I'm gone. And you know, then when I am home, you know, they want to talk to me. I'm not here, you know. So I had a lot of issues with that. But I'll pass that. Thank you.
So kind of like what Paul alluded to at the beginning, I kind of think that a lot of what that reading is kind of, I'd be redundant to repeat, you know, I'd have to repeat a lot of the stuff that I already shared, but I do want to emphasize that I believe that this follow-up reading also emphasized that, you know, basically faith without works is dead. You know, I can believe stuff, I can say it, I can think it, but if I don't act it, I'm not going to get the results. You know, we have a chapter in our big book called Into Action. There is no chapter called Into Thinking, Into Figuring This Out, Into Analyzing, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's the same with the Bible. You know, we have a book called Acts, but there's no book called Figures It Out. You know what I mean? And it's all about the action, regardless of what's going on in my head or my emotions. However, I do believe it's important that we have, that we're right in our hearts when we take that action. Because if I can take the same action twice, one time from my heart and another time from my ego, and get two very different results. So I'll leave it at that until the next reading. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you both. All right. Next reading is also going to be on page 83. There may be some misgivings we can never fully right. We don't worry about them. If we can honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay it. We don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. All.
Hi, guys. Poor alcoholic. Yeah, so what comes to mind with this, you know, I'm just here to share my experience with, you know, these principles, these steps. And I can remember going through some inventory work, and I remember what came up on my 8-step list was being in different neighborhoods, drinking and using, and in one case, using in front of a bus full of children, school bus, that looked down into the car and seen me doing some things, and also sitting in front of people's houses and in certain neighborhoods and getting, you know, drunk and high. Now, how do you make amends to something like that, to a community, you know? It was bothering me. I remember talking with my sponsor at that time about it. And I remember he just said, well, why don't you pray about it? And, you know, he had made some suggestions on to do certain things. And I remember it took a little while. Like, it was like, okay, I had like, you know, I had certain people to make amends to. It was the, you know, the mom, the dad, the sister, the brother, you know, the, you know, just the people close to me that were on the list. But then these other things started coming up, and I remember, I don't remember exactly how long I had sober. I might've had a year. And I remember it coming to me that a way to make amends to that neighborhood or that society would actually go down there and maybe, you know, do some sort of service work. And it was Thanksgiving time. And I went down, it was actually, yeah, I think it was 2015. So I had a couple of years sober, and I went down to in that neighborhood there. There was happened to be a church, and, you know, I volunteered to pack up Thanksgiving dinners, and then they pack up, like, I don't know, thousands of dinners, and then we deliver them around the city to people's homes. And I remember doing that, and I was like, wow, okay. And and then I did it the following year, and I've been doing it ever since. I tried to do it this year. I actually, you know, went there, and there was nobody there, obviously, because of the COVID-19, but, you know, I was kind of looking forward to doing that this year. But that was a way that I was able to make amends to a society, but as far as you know, the I'm sorry and all that stuff that we were talking about earlier, and showing actions, man, I just lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. There you go. You know what? I think it's time for me to pass on that. I just kind of lost what I was going to say, so it's obviously not that important, but thank you.
Thank you.
The one thing that I was thinking that I could share with about my experience related to that writing, or excuse me, the reading, you know, it's talking about having willingness even when I can't necessarily make the amend right this minute, you know, but I still have the willingness to do it. And I can actually get freedom as long as I really am genuinely willing and, you know, doing what I can to try to put myself in a position where I can actually, you know, set it right if, you know. So the biggest one was my ex-wife. We separated, I want to say about 6 months before I got sober. And then once I got sober, that pretty much guaranteed that we weren't getting back together again, because she was not looking for a sober husband, first of all, and not even to mention all the other things that I hadn't gotten honest with her about yet. But, you know, one of the things that held my whole life together, including my marriage, was drinking. And, I remember driving to work. There was this choke point in the traffic and there was this big dam. And so a lot of times we'd be sitting on this little bridge and just staring at that dam. And I'm watching like the little water, you know, trickle through the cracks in the dam going up, you know, this would be quite ugly if that dam breaks loose right now while I'm stuck right here. Right. But when I first got sober, I was looking at it like, that is like alcohol in my life. It's like, it's the glue that's holding everything together. And now they want to take that away from me. And my whole life is going to come crashing down when they do that. And I didn't know how accurate I was until I got sober and had the experience of being sober with no sponsor and no steps. You know, that's exactly what happened. And I had that experience for 7 years before I was able to find a sponsor that I could actually listen to. But in looking at before I had a sponsor, I tried to, you know, figure this stuff out on my own. And I tried to make an amends over the phone to my wife at the time. We weren't divorced yet. And I pray to God that as long as I live, I never, ever call another human being the kind of names that I called her in my amends. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to try to make an amends for my amends. It was so ugly. You know what I mean? So in my future attempts to try to get a hold of her, she made it very clear that she was not really interested in talking with me. Right. And I had to respect that. But I would, you know, use the internet, which fortunately came along somewhere around that time, to kind of, you know, stalk her without stalking her, if you know what I mean. I'm just kind of keeping track of where she is and what she's doing, so that in case she ever does get, you know, willing to listen to me, that I'm there. So I was taking these little actions, like sending her a birthday card every now and then, you know, and putting a note in there going, look, I know you don't want to talk to me, but I just want to make sure that you know that I'm here if you ever need me for anything, that kind of stuff. You know, really respectful. And then, I don't remember when it was, but I'm guessing it was around my 25th year of sobriety, which was only, I couldn't have been, but anyways, longer than that, but about a decade ago. I don't know how long I was sober, but I know it had been 18 years since I talked to her. So it might've been that, but anyways, a woman that I sponsored, lived in the same town as her. And I just written her a letter and said, hey, look, if you don't want to, if you don't talk to me, I get it. You know, I'm really good friends with this woman who I'm sponsoring in the same town as you. And if you want to call her or write to her, this is her information. Even if it's just to tell her or to tell me to go screw myself, you know, get it. Just don't stop calling me. Stop reaching out to me. And in the letter, I was telling her about a few things that I felt like I did that was really unfair. And so she calls me out of nowhere, right? And she says something along the lines of, Steve, I read your letter. And I got to tell you, I have no clue what you're talking about. I remember you being nothing but nice and kind and patient with me. We just never should have been married, you know? Right. And I'm thinking, like, wow, it's a good thing I beat myself up for 18 years, huh? Right. About how I thought I destroyed this woman's life, you know, but I got to tell you, it was worth every second of that 18 year wait, you know, just respecting her along and waiting for her to be ready. It was worth every second. And, you know, we tried to kind of rekindle, not the same kind of relationship, but a relationship, a new relationship. And it just wasn't meant to happen, you know, mostly because I think she struggles with her own, you know, drinking and such. And, but it's right. You know, we're right with each other. And she knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that I am one phone call away. And she knows that I have always been, and I always will be. And that's what makes it right. Now I'm in right relation with God, and because I'm right relationship with her. And that was the biggest experience I've had with being unable to make the amends, but I was absolutely 100% willing the whole time. So I'm gonna leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you. Right. Next reading is also on page 83, and it looks like this will be our last reading of the evening. I think we recently condensed some of these. All right. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. It will always materialize if we work for them. Hey, Paul.
Hi, guys. Paul again. Wow, just hearing you read that, you know, I just think about being spiritually high, you know, and I'm sorry for using those two words together, but that's been my experience of being able to fill that void in me in the past. One amends that's coming to mind was some years ago, before getting sober and actually getting involved with step work, I stole some items from somebody that I didn't know. Okay. Stole this stuff in order so I can, you know, fulfill my habit of drinking and using. And so years go by and I'm on a job. I'm a contractor. I'm in a trade, and so I have my own little business, and I get to go into people's homes and, you know, work on their bathrooms and install tile and stuff. And so, you know, I'm on one job, and I'm talking with the homeowner, and she turns out to be an author. She wrote some spiritual book, and you can just talk to her and tell she's like very laid back, kind of a cool lady, you know, always smiling. And so me and her, every day I'm working at her house, you know, I get to talk to her and, you know, kind of like show her what I know about spirituality, you know, and what AA has taught me. And, you know, I can, you know, kind of feel like, okay, I know what I'm talking about. And, you know, she's sharing some stuff, but she's mostly being quiet, and I'm over here like yip yap and showing her how much I know, you know. And all of a sudden, up pulls up this white van, and it's the guy jumps out, and he has a coat on with a company name on it, and he comes up to me and her, and she goes, "Oh, I'm going to introduce you to so and so. He's our electrician." So I look at his coat, and I'm like, "You got to be kidding me!" And it's the company that I had robbed. And right before he walked up, I'm telling this lady how spiritual I am and everything, and like, you know, and how I know God and stuff like that, you know. And this guy walks into the house and "Hey, how you doing?" And I'm like, "Hey, what's up?" You know. And so she says, "Well, I got to get going because I got to go get a sub for my son. Do you guys want anything to eat?" I'm like, "No, I'm okay," you know. So she leaves me home alone with this guy, and he starts going into the bathroom with a ladder, putting up one of these fans in the bathrooms. So I'm standing in the kitchen looking at him on the ladder, and I'm thinking to myself, and I hear this voice in my head. It goes, "Well, why don't you go and tell him what you did so I was like, you know, thinking to myself, well, if I do that, you know, the contractor's gonna find out who sent me in this job, the homeowner, they're all gonna think I'm a piece of crap, you know. And then I heard, "Well, I thought you trusted me." So first thing I said to him was, "Hey, you know, do you own the company?" And he's like, "Yeah, I own the company, you know, I've been the owner for X amount of years, da, 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 da." I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah. Wait, weren't you guys over there on that, you guys had a shop over on Route 80? He's like, "Yeah, we had a shop over there. We moved the shop. We needed a bigger place, you know what I mean? So we've been out of there a couple of years." I'm like, "Oh." So he's like, I'm like, "Okay." I'm like, "Hey," he comes down off the ladder. I'm like, "Hey, can I talk to you for a minute?" So he's like, yeah, what's up, kid? So I'm like, hey, I harmed you. So he's like, excuse me? He's like, you harmed me? I'm like, he's like, how the hell did you do that? I'm like, well, you know, I was the one who robbed your van one night and took some tools out of your van because I had a drinking problem and stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah? He goes, it got robbed 3 times. So I'm like, dude, listen, I only robbed it once, man, you know? And I'm like, I'm serious. If I did it 3 times, I would tell you, man, I did it once, you know? And so he was like, yeah. He's like, then you see him. He starts to change gears, right? I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm gonna get like punched in the face right now. You know what I mean? Like he's kind of a big dude, you know. I mean, so he says, you know, he says, well, you know, I tried to claim insurance on that stuff, man, and I didn't have no receipts and stuff, and you know, like I didn't get a penny for all that stuff, you know. That really hurt me, you know. And like you can see, he had a resentment against the world, you know what I mean? And so I had gotten taught at that moment that like, if I'm going to go and I'm going to go and try to make amends to somebody, that I better be prepared to actually pull a check out of my pocket and give him the check. So I said to him, well, you know what? I live like 2 blocks down the road. Do you want to follow me to my house? And I don't know how much I owe you. I don't even know. I don't remember what I stole from you, but you can come up with some sort of price. You know, I can give you, if I can give you the whole thing, I'll give you the whole thing. If I can't, then would you be able to work pay some payments out with me? He's like, really? He goes, you would do that? I'm like, yeah. So he proceeds to follow me down a couple blocks, and I pull up to my house and I'm run up to the steps to get my checkbook. My wife comes out. She goes, what's going on here? She sees this van with some strange guy. I'm like, oh, I'm making amends to this guy. She goes, now? I'm like, yeah. So I come out with my checkbook, and he says to me, hey, he gets out of his van and he sticks his hand out. And he says, with a smile on his face, and he says, hey man, I really appreciate this, you know? So, I go, wow. He goes, yeah, you know, just give me $500 and we'll call it even. So I'm like, all right. So I gave him $500, and the best feeling in the world was actually walking away. And I literally felt like I was floating on a cloud. You know what I mean? But before that, it was fear that was trying to avoid me from going and living in the truth. You know what I mean? The fear was trying to stop me, you know, and keep me in the dark and keep me, you know, afraid and, you know, and hidden and everything. But like, you know, bringing that out in truth, was just such a relief to me. And I tell you, I believe that I grew off of that. Like, honestly, you know, I'll pass it that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so I always like to point out that these promises are night step promises. They're not just if you just go to meetings and don't drink promises, because that's what I thought they were for a long time. and they have come true for me. And you know, I'll just share with you one more story. About how, and it's, you know, the essence of this story is really about how our problems are of our own making. And that's really good news, because I can change me. I can't change other people. And so if my problems were of the making of somebody else, I'd be screwed unless they were willing to cooperate. And even first off, they're not cooperating. But second of all, even if they did, it wouldn't change anything, because they're really not the maker of my problems. And so when I was, I'm a pilot. And, you know, I like to say by fetish, you know, I've obsessed about airplanes since I was a little kid. And actually, that's how I got sober. I was flying from the Navy, and the Navy put me in rehab. But before I went to the military, and after I graduated from college and I went to an aviation program, I got this job in Frederick, Maryland, flight instructing. And I loved it. I had a lot of fun, didn't pay very well. Right. And you know, I was kind of weighing between love this job, hate the paycheck, right? And I had this opportunity to move to Ohio, get a job that paid a lot better and still be able to do some flying out there. But I had no money to get out there for the interview. And so I decided to borrow the company's airplane, one of their airplanes, if you would. A lot of people call that Grand Theft Airplane. I like to say that I was borrowing it. I wasn't planning on keeping it. I don't have any place to park it. Of course, I'm bringing it back, but I disconnected the meter so that I wouldn't have to pay for the amount of time that I put on the plane. And I got caught, right, when I got back. And they figured that I owed them about $600. This is when I was like 22 years old. I didn't get sober till I was 28, right? And but they figured I owed them about $600. I figured they still owed me a bunch of money, even though I just got done stealing their airplane. I don't know how I figured that, but I did, I can promise you. But I had about a $300 paycheck coming to me that I had plans for, and they decided they were going to keep that paycheck and hand me a bill for another $300. And I kept a resentment towards that company and those owners for 16 years. And that resentment went away the precise second that I went back and paid them that other $300 that I owed them. You know, I'm sure it was just a coincidence, right? But anyways, they went away, that, you know, as soon as I made it right. And I was able to see, you know, not only how selfish and self-consumed I was, but that they actually could have, they could have put me in jail, and they didn't, you know, but I couldn't see that either because I was so consumed with myself. And so that's just one little story I wanted to share with you about getting free from making these amends and then enjoying these promises. So that's all I got for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thank you both so much. That concludes the sharing portion of our meeting. I will let everybody unmute in a little bit to thank our awesome speakers for tonight. Real quick. Ooh, all right. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. Keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Real quick, I'm also going to just throw that link. Oh, David threw that link in there. So that link for the PayPal is in the chat window. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a safe and fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA related announcements? We can take a couple real quick. Raise your hand, I'll unmute you. That one right here. Can't see. I'm not seeing any. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hands? All right. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available in the Zoom room after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to us. And if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. And in closing, I will unmute everybody after the Lord's Prayer, and then we can thank our awesome speakers for tonight. But could I get a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Let's, Leanne, do you want to do it? I'll throw it up. Awesome. me unmute you. Oh, you good?
Yep, I'm good.
Awesome.
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. All right. Do a quick moment of silence, followed by do a little virtual circle up. We'll say the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you both so much. Let me figure out how to get everybody on.
Fantastic. Thank you, Paul, Steve. That was awesome.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
Steve. Thanks, Paul. Good stuff, guys.